Kia ora and welcome to the C Word Radio, the podcast for cancer-y people who want real conversations about cancer. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find good podcasts. Hello, my cancer-y friends. Thank you for joining me. Today's episode is one I think many of you will resonate with. I've talked a lot in previous episodes with guests about the danger of using words like warrior and battle and any of that sort of language around a war when it comes to cancer. My theory is that cancer is really confronting for people, and it is too hard for them to talk about because they're forced into talking about their own mortality. And I think this is where toxic positivity has been allowed to fester and grow. If you're not sure of what I mean by toxic positivity, do any of these things sound familiar? During treatment, or maybe if you're having a tough day and you tell a friend or a family member and they respond with, "But you're so strong, you've got this, just be positive." Those are all examples of toxic positivity. My guest today has actually learned how to coach her family and friends out of the habit after a shock diagnosis of ovarian cancer 4 years ago. Elise Jack Kafusi was 24, living away from home in Brisbane and establishing her career. Cancer never came into the realm of possibility for her. I sat down with Elise recently and we talked about how cancer has changed her life and why it's so important that we challenge the stigma around ovarian cancer. This is Elise's story. Thank you so much for joining me. It's really awesome to be able to sit down with you and learn more about your story.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Elise is in Brisbane at the moment and you've just come out of a lockdown. Tell us what it's been like during a lockdown, because you guys have seen New South Wales and Victoria go in and out of these lockdowns. Yeah. What's it been like the past few days for you?
For me personally, it's just been, it's the unknowing, waiting for each day for the government to announce what's going on with the cases. And so it's been a bit crazy, but in a way, yeah, I would say, yeah, it's been really crazy. I think crazy is just the word I can say right now. The most appropriate word I can say is crazy.
And it has been though, hasn't it? Because it's just like nothing else that we've ever really experienced in this past year.
Like, who would have thought, you know, pre-COVID, we could travel, we could do this and that. It was just easy just to book a flight or the hot wearing masks or going to places. It's really changed. Yeah, I never in a million years or in our lifetime or the next lifetime this would happen.
No. And it's funny you mentioned travel because I was thinking about this the other day, that I find it so weird that you actually can't just book a flight and go overseas. You can't be like, hey, let's do a 6-week holiday around Europe.
it's not happening. Like the thought of it, I'm like, wow. Now, you know, that option is taken away from us. It's, oh my gosh, the things we took for granted.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But travel was quite a big part of your life, wasn't it? So yes. You were a flight attendant.
Yes. So I call it pre-cancer. I was a flight attendant and I started at the age of 19.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'm 28 now, so at the age of 19, and it was something that I've always wanted to do, my dream job. Yeah, and that I loved. Like, it didn't feel like work to me, as corny as that sounds probably to some people, but I loved what I did. Yeah. I absolutely love.
That's really awesome when you find something that you really love. Did you do international travel or domestic?
Predominantly it was domestic, but with the airline that I worked for, we also did international, but it was only for like charters, like a charter flight or private charters. So it wasn't just, you know, oh, go to LA or go to New York. Yeah, nothing like that. But I definitely got to see all of Australia. I didn't realize how beautiful Australia is. because we were able to go to unique places and stuff like that.
Let's paint the picture a little bit. Where were you? What were you doing leading up to your cancer diagnosis?
So I was 24. I was living at a home with my best friend in town in Brisbane. And I was a flight attendant and I was promoted to we call it a cabin supervisor or cabin manager. So to me, that was a big thing because, I thought, no way, I don't have the confidence for that, but I surprised myself. So, I was living life, going out, socializing, going out with friends and not worrying about my health. Never really went to the doctors. That's all I was worried about, was just, am I going to have enough money for the next fortnight so I can go out again?
I mean, basically, you are living like we most of us did at 24. It's as you're finding your feet as an adult.
Yeah.
You might be studying or in the first sort of stages of a career. I mean, few of us do think about our health age. I think this part is really important because I feel, especially with ovarian or any of our gynae cancers, also bowel cancer, that some of those symptoms that you experienced are often things that we go, might just be eating something I don't like, or, oh, that's just a normal period. What did you start experiencing that made you go, oh, this is a bit strange?
So it was about mid-2017, mid-year, and I had been experiencing vaginal bleeding. So I knew it wasn't my period, because the color of when I would look at my pad, it was quite dark, it was black, the blood was quite clotty, but it wasn't like a normal flow. It was on and off. And that raised alarm bells for me, but it took me 3 months to actually do something about it. So I thought, oh, yeah, no, I remember talking to my best friend. I was like, oh, this is what's happening. What do you think? She goes, oh, you see how it goes? I said, yeah, I want you to see how it goes. And then I spoke to my mother and I was due to go in for a pap smear. I've been meaning to go in for a pap smear and just do a general health check. And so I was like, okay, fine. Okay, I'll go. So I just went to the local GP around where mum and dad live. And we went from there.
It's really interesting, I think, with cancer when things start going on, is it highlights to me how important it is to have conversations with other people about periods and things, because you start to realize what's normal and what isn't, because what I experience may not be what someone else experiences. But if we talk about it and share these things openly and without shame, when things like this start happening, you can go, oh, that might sound a bit strange.
Yeah, exactly. I never had those type of conversations with my mom. Not even my mom, just like in general. Because it's just part of being a woman. So you just go, oh, yeah, I've got my period. When you say it to your girlfriends or whoever, or your partner or whoever, we never actually speak about it. It's something,
It's something that's really struck me as I've spoken to more women and people about the different symptoms that we experience. Mm-hmm. And it's something that people like Talk Peach and the lovely Tasha Peach is doing, to really pull down some of those stigmas around talking about what our body does and what does normal mean and all of those things. So you go to the doctor and I'm assuming you probably had scans and biopsies.
Yes. So I went to the doctor and I just told her, oh, this is what's happening. And then she just asked me, what else have you been experiencing? And I was thinking, oh, I'm quite tired and I'm a bit bloated. I just really la-di-da about it. So I'm so blasé. And yeah, booked it. She started to feel around my lower abdominal area. Booked him in for an ultrasound. But the crazy thing is, she said, because you are young, Elise, it could be PCOS, or it could be a cyst, or it could be, endometriosis, or it could be just a rare case of cancer. But because you're young and you look healthy, but we just need to double check. So, yeah, that's when the ultrasounds are booked in and scans. And this was probably in October 2007, September. And that went on for 3 months. That was the last time I heard that you may, or rare case of cancer. That was the last time I heard about cancer. And it wasn't until before they put me to sleep for my biopsy in December, I was then told by the surgeon the gynecologic surgeon asking me, oh, do you know why we're doing this? I said, oh, yeah, you just want to find out what's going on. And she's like, oh, actually, we think that you have cancer. We suspect you have cancer. And I'm thinking, wait. And then I went, yeah, obviously, they put me to sleep. Yeah.
I know people can't see this. I'm so stunned. Because they know when you hear, you know, they're going to put you under, you're having a procedure. They will always say, do you know why you're in? Yeah. And I can't even imagine about to be put under, which is a strange experience anyway, with someone going, oh, actually, surprise, you're in here because we think you've got cancer. And so had it taken 3 months from seeing the doctor to having this point here where you're about to go under in the... Wow.
And I'd seen like specialists because I was referred to a specialist and then he referred me to the specialist who I'm under now at here in Mater, Brisbane, Mater Hospital in South Brisbane. And he said he was concerned and I was like, oh, okay. But nothing was mentioned about cancer. It wasn't until she told me if I went under and I'm thinking, okay. Yeah. Like, how does one process that?
I'm stunned. So they, do you know why there were no ultrasounds or tests sooner? Or were there? And
there were, like, when I think back, I know, I just remember going all to these appointments. So there was, like, ultrasounds and blood tests and MRI and CT scans, a whole lot. This is all brand new to me. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. In and out of appointments, and I always had either my sisters or my parents with me, or sometimes I'll just go in by myself. And it was mum who had a feeling that I feel like this is more sinister, but she was telling dad that, but she never told me. But she was really on my back saying, you should be asking these questions. Why, Jess? I was like, mum, I don't know. I'm just going with the flow.
I guess part of it is, and I know because I was a bit older, so I was 37 when my cancer experience started. And I wonder whether for you it was the same where cancer wasn't even in the realm of thinking. Why on earth would you be worried about having cancer? And so when you came back around from there, I mean, did you wake up going, what was that conversation?
Like, what the bleep happened? So, you know, the nurse is waking up and the nurse is like, my name's actually Alice, but I go by Alicia. And she's like, oh, Alice, we've just called your mom. Mom's on her way because the surgeon's name, Dr. Pearl Tong. Dr. Pearl wants to discuss about your biopsy. And that's when, because I was supposed to go home after that and they will call me. She goes, you know, she really wants to talk to you and mom. And I'm thinking, oh. And at this time, it's like, oh, I think I was still in denial of what I heard. I didn't really process it. And then, yeah, mum comes along and we had to wait for three hours because she was in another procedure. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It's insane. It's just, And so, like, this is really the start of you on the cancer train, which I call it. So you get on and that
train.
Yeah. You then... probably went through that this is what you've got, this is the treatment. Talk us through that process.
So pretty much, you know, when she was done with her procedure and stuff, that's when I found out I had, like, I have ovarian cancer. Now hearing that, I always say, it was like, you know, in the movies where you see people, where someone like finds out something and then everything around them is silent and everything's like moving. It was like that. We were in this room and all I could see was her mouth moving and I'm looking at mum and I'm thinking, wait, what? It's weird because I feel like my brain, or I don't know, is it your brain that blocks out? So it's really blurry of what, but I just remember that. And then I just remember crying after that. I was just, and she's thinking, oh my God, I'm thinking, what is ovarian cancer? I've never heard of it before. I've heard of breast cancer, you know, cervical cancer, or never ovarian cancer. I just thought they had the wrong person.
I really, mine was like that, but it's very similar to that in that sense where you're sitting in that room with, I was with my GP, and then, it's almost like that roar of silence and going, what? Because never ever in the realm of possibility think that you're going to be sat. Not at a young age, maybe when you're eight.
So that's what we think. And obviously, having cancer, regardless of what age you are, it's so horrible. But to have it in your 20s, your 30s, even in your 40s, yeah.
How did your family respond? Do you have brothers and sisters? Because I know our families often, especially I'm the youngest of three girls, so it was pretty difficult, yeah, in terms of the baby having him. Where are you and your siblings, and how did it impact your family?
So I'm number three out of seven, and Mum had breast cancer. Yeah, she had breast cancer, but she's not actually my biological mother. So quick background, I'm actually adopted out, which is quite common in Pacific Island culture, biologically my auntie and uncle, but I know them as Mum and Dad. But I still have a very close relationship with my biological parents. You know, we're all family. So, yeah, it's like I got two sets of parents, very close with my siblings. And Mum and Dad, yeah, it affected them even still now. Yeah, they didn't take it quite well, including my whole family, like my immediate family, my siblings. Yeah, they didn't take the news quite well. If anything, it's like, I was okay, but I wasn't okay. But for them, no way. Yeah, they couldn't really process it, especially my parents.
It is difficult, isn't it? Because I don't know how to put it into words properly, but yeah, I think back to that time. And
yeah,
it is hard for you because you're having to tell people. And so you're also having to deal with whatever emotional response they have. But I think when it's you going through it as well, you kind of go into this zone of, I just have to deal with what's in front.
And that is true.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but for them, they're in, I don't know, it must be quite
different. Like in this limbo, you know, feeling helpless, because I've been on that side of the, with Mum. But yeah, it's like, okay, I got to deal with this. And they're trying to deal with it, but you don't know how to make them feel better. They're trying to figure out how they can make you feel better. It affects everyone. Cancer just does not only affect the person who has cancer. It affects those around that person.
Absolutely. It's got such long tentacles, I think. It just sort of weaves its way through. I mean, obviously, you would have had treatment and all those sorts of things. I don't know what the treatment usually is for ovarian cancer. Was it a long process?
It was. Because I had to have a massive surgery, like operation done. And then you have to recover from that, which took about 2-3 months. Yeah, it was massive. And then the treatment for each person or each who has ovarian cancer, their treatment is catered to them. Yeah, like I've met women who have had different treatments to mine. It can be a long process, just depending on what, I guess, grade. Like you've got low grade or high grade and what stage you are at and what works for your body. Because, yeah, so I had treatment, chemo. I didn't do any radiation. So I just had chemotherapy and that went on for 6-7.
God, it's a long time to be having chemotherapy. I guess it sounds like for you the diagnosis process took quite a long time. And I'm curious to know whether, to your knowledge, is that normal or... Because it just doesn't sound fast enough to me to diagnose someone. Tell us a little bit more about that, whether this is normal for younger women or whether they drop the ball in a sense.
Yeah, that is actually a good question because I've actually never been asked that before. Something I've heard of other women around my age where it's taken a while. Or they've been misdiagnosed and they've had to go back and push and say, no, something's really going on. But finding, yeah, well, the ones who I've met, it's taken them a while. You know, that's a really good question. I actually want to look into that. Yeah. It's actually normal.
Yeah, it just,
yeah,
it's quite a long time because I don't know, the little bit I know about ovarian cancer, it can be very aggressive. It seems to me when we're younger with cancers, it is often quite aggressive as well. I know mine was and other people I've met. So at the time, what was the prognosis given to you?
At the time, so it was pretty much, you know, do treatment and then go into remission and then just monitor you. I don't really like saying cancer-free I used to say. And then I'm like, oh, and I think cancer free, because, you know, I ask myself, are you really cancer free? There's always that chance of it coming back, despite you can be in remission for 30 years or whatever. So it was more, they said, we're just going to monitor you when it's remission, and they'll monitor me for the next 5 years.
It's really interesting, isn't it, that concept of cancer free? Because I
think
people really want to know that you've beaten it, that you've fought this cancer and things. And I always think of it in the way that I don't think we're ever fully free of cancer.
Yeah.
Once you've had cancer, it impacts you in such a way that you're never free of the impact as such. And you're right, you never really know what's going to happen. So I think that sort of concept of, is this person cancer free? Yes and no.
It's a yes and no. I totally agree.
And I'm always curious with other people who've been through cancer of what that after treatment period is like, because I had 18 months of treatment. And once the main treatment was done, you stumble out going, oh my gosh, what on earth has happened? And I actually found that almost as hard as going through treatment, because it was like, what on earth do I do now? How do you rebuild your life when you've had this earth shattering?
Yeah.
Please tell us how.
I mean, how do I live my life? Where do I start? Because right now, I feel the after treatment, that's when it started for me. I feel like that's when it really started for me, because when I think back, you go into all these appointments and it's like you go into survival mode. Okay, so next day, you've got treatments, you've got appointments, you're always busy. When that's all silent, there goes that silent thing again. The raw silence, okay. Oh, okay, so yeah, finished treatment. All right, yep, so how do I start my life? That I really struggle. Now, people think everyone's different who've had cancer. Me personally, I struggled so bad once treatment finished. I lost some people in my life I never thought in a million years. And that's okay, because, you know, it's fine. But, yeah, it was really, how do I come back to life? It was like more, I was grieving. I'm still grieving my life pre-cancer. I'm grieving that, but then I have to start again, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. It makes so much sense to me. Because you lose people because you are not the same, and you're trying to process this thing that none of your other peer group are really going through, unless it's people you've met from the cancer community. Your body has changed. The way you experience your body has changed. You can't escape I don't think you can escape without an emotional impact to of having cancer. And it is a grief. It's a total grief because, 24, you shouldn't be dealing with that. It's just so huge.
Yeah, so I am quite depressed and had anxiety. I had to go, see a doctor. I had to see a psychologist, counsellor. And it was like the emotional trauma. If anything, I think what I advocate for varying cancer, but it's the mental health. Cancer causes depression, anxiety. It really does. And, people think, oh, yes. And, I'm not blaming them because they don't know, but it's more mental health isn't really highlighted when it comes to people dealing with cancer, the after treatment. If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, completely. And it really doesn't. I think in New Zealand as well, there's a lot of money and funding and focus on the person in treatment.
Yes.
But there's not much in terms of healing and restoration after, And I met a young woman in New South Wales who does advocacy around breast cancer, but it's that after stuff as well, because she had that same experience of you go through this enormous thing and, you're left sort of standing in the dark, because I think there is so much focus on, all right, we'd have to try and make you better. And now you can go and try and live your life. And you think, and it's just such an enormous thing. And I don't think people fully grasp the enormity of what we go through as people experiencing cancer.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And that is something I've learned over the 4 years of dealing with this. And even now, it's still a struggle. Like, even when I was in remission, you know, like, oh, great, you've beaten it. And it's weird because you have so much support, you know, people are reaching out while you're in hospital and doing treatments. And then that kind of stops. You know, it stops. And it's, no, I feel like I really need you now. This is what I need. This is what I need support now is the after treatment. It's the life after doing all. That's when I need support the most. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, and the, you know, so, yeah, so many people say this, you know, and it seems to be a resentment experience that we all have, where it's like, yeah, of course, having cancer treatment and being diagnosed with cancer is huge and it's really hard and chemo is awful and radiation is surprisingly awful, but it's the afterwards that is just, for so many people, is really hard. And I think it is that mix of you're grieving, you are emotionally traumatized by this experience, and you feel this pressure to be okay.
Yes. Oh, yes. So we all resonate with that.
I am not okay.
I'm not okay. And I learned something from my counsellor, who I'm currently seeing, who's part of Ovarian Cancer Australia. And she said to me, because there was this really tough time, this was last year or earlier this year. Anyways, I was just at this point of my life and I'm like, oh my God, I'm struggling really bad. I'm struggling because I had a recurrence last year. I was struggling mentally and she said toxic positivity.
Oh, yes.
And when she said toxic positivity and explained what toxic positivity is, and told me about it because she realized that I always tried to find the silver lining, or I say, oh, look, others have it worse, or survivor's guilt. And that was my mind frame. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be okay because others have it worse. I should be thankful that I'm here. And then she's just, stop, hang on. Let's just stop and let's just acknowledge how you really feel. And I said, why? I should be grateful that I'm alive. She goes, no. This is what we call, if you've never heard it before, and I've never heard it before until I had this discussion with this toxic positivity, which is pretty much, in my words, sugarcoating how you really feel. In that, as humans, when someone is upset or angry or whatever, they think it's negative and they just want to make it better. And that's what we all do. And I'm guilty of that doing to other people before finding out toxic positivity is, oh, no, you're going to be okay. What can I do to make you feel better? Yeah, but it's, we really need to acknowledge how we feel, because that's what makes us human. And that's what's part of going on this whole cancer journey. Is acknowledging these feelings, because you know what? You're not always going to be positive. And being positive is really exhausting, because you put on this front and you just say, okay, I am not allowed to feel like this, so I'm going to feel positive. So it's telling yourself that, no, I can't feel sad. I can't feel that. I can't feel this. I can't feel that. I have to be happy, positive, strong. Even when strong, I'm like, yeah, it's exhausting.
It's utterly exhausting. It's really interesting you mention it, because I think part of it is that people can't cope with what, talking about cancer, they're confronting mortality.
Yeah.
None of us want to think about our mortality. And you make such a good point there around the fact that when we don't allow people to actually feel the full spectrum of their feelings, that's when we can get even more depressed, or our grieving is prolonged and is harder. Because yeah, you can, and I was talking about this with someone who will be coming up in another episode, that you can hold both at once. We can be really bloody angry that happened to us and still experience joy, and we're allowed to have both.
Yeah,
we're allowed to be really pissed off that we have had to experience this thing. It's really funny, isn't it? Because it's even things like confronting at the moment for me, the fertility treatment that we're going through might not work. There is a high chance because the stats are against us. Mm-hmm. And I know people want to be really positive and say, it will work, it will be fine.
Yes.
But then it means that it might not, and I'm allowed to feel sad that this is where we're at.
Yeah.
Yeah, while at the same time trying to be positive about it to get through it. But you're also allowed to acknowledge the elements of your situation.
Exactly. And, you know, I feel like as humans, we forget that we're human. It's part of being human. It's part of feeling like this. And when she said that and I looked more into it, I was like, wow. And it's helped. And it's also with my support system, or even just talking to people when I like am pretty open about my journey on social media. It actually changes the conversation when you actually tell someone, you know what, no, I'm not okay. And I'm not okay today. And it actually changes the conversation, and it gives that person a better understanding of how you're feeling, instead of them saying, oh no, you're going to be okay, everything's going to be okay, look on the bright side. But yeah, I and that's what's helped with my family as well to cope with things, to say, look, how you guys are feeling, it's okay to actually feel like it's okay, it's totally okay, and we need to acknowledge.
Absolutely. Because you're having active treatment at the moment.
Yeah.
And so I imagine you are going to be having a lot of up and down days. So is this something that has really helped you navigate being in treatment again and back into the uncertainty? You know, what else is helping you get through being back in treatment and back into the sort of swamp of emotion?
So what has helped me, especially during this time, this round of treatment, so this will probably be, this is my third round of having to do chemo again. And what's helped me this time is that I'm just doing things a lot different to what how I used to do it back in the past. So obviously the whole acknowledging how I'm feeling, that the whole knowing about what toxic positivity and all that has helped me get through this part of the cancer train, the cancer journey. And staying, I've realized that means staying active. I know we're all different, and because I've always been quite active and going to the gym, and before when I was going through treatment, I would stop that, obviously due to fatigue and stuff, but also the way how I was eating. I was like, whatever, because I'm a bit of an emotional eater. I'll just eat everything and anything. And now this time, you know, I'm still eating the foods I want to eat, but I'm not binge eating. Staying active. And I think that's what's really helped me get through this treatment.
I follow you on Instagram, and wrong, man. And it's so cool. I love the way that you're approaching this. You really are putting tools in place. And that's what I see when I see photos of you doing lifting things. It's like putting together all those tools to help get you through.
And just being true to myself with my feelings is telling my family how I really feel. And now that they've got a better understanding of toxic positivity, I tell you what, it's changed. It's just changed everything. It really has, on how they talk to me with things, or how they can help me when I'm feeling down. And it goes to that saying, that Alice in Wonderland saying, when you can't look on the bright side, I will sit with you in the dark. That right there. And that's what I said to them. And they're like, oh my gosh. And I said, well, like, yeah, just sit in the dark with me. That's all. So yeah, oh my gosh, I'm just getting a bit emotional because I really resonate with that, and I'm sure you do too, and the cancer community can resonate with that.
Absolutely. It's such a good one because it's true. I think it's similar to the concept of holding space for someone, is you don't have to fix them. You don't have to come up with a solution or anything like that. You just need to allow the space for them to feel whatever way they want to feel. And I think when you're going through something like cancer or a major life event, that's all you need. You just need to know that those people are there with you and that you don't have to fix it.
Yeah. Yes, preach.
Oh, wow. And I know that education and advocacy is something that you are passionate about. What are the symptoms or things going on with your body that people should be looking out for or investigating?
So with ovarian cancer, signs are very vague, the symptoms. So for pain during sexual intercourse, bloating, change in your bowel habits, you can also, the weight loss, feeling fatigued, the change in your menstrual cycle, they're pretty much the main ones. But, and that's the thing with ovarian cancer, these symptoms, as women, we deal with this like every day. Maybe not all of it, or could be all of it, but it's, if that's not your normal and it's been persisting for more than 2 weeks or it's been going on for a while, oh yeah, go see your local GP. Go see your local GP.
It's so true, isn't it, that these are things that you, because I think at the moment I'm really tired. But yeah, I think part of it is knowing your body and working towards breaking down any shame or stigma there is around things that our bodies do, whether that's something that you've learned culturally or for your family and those sorts of things, that it's actually okay to go and see someone or to seek the help that you need without being shamed about it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And especially like in, my background's Tongan and the Pacific Island culture, there's a lot of stigma, as in taboo. We don't talk about this stuff. You don't talk about your period, or you don't talk about your vagina. We can talk about the breasts, but we can't talk about the vagina. And that has been in the Pacific Island culture, I've noticed, in the Tongan culture, it's a massive taboo topic. And that's also part of what I'm trying to do, is to break that stigma, to, you know, for all women's sake, it is part of our body. It's where we come from. So we came out, popped out.
And it can save our lives, or it can break that down and say it's actually okay to ask about these things. And if you don't feel like talking about it to your doctor, there are other doctors that you can go to and talk about it. I know that you have treatment this week, so I'm sending you lots of good
energy
to do that. And I will look forward to more effort-lifting pictures.
And I look forward to seeing more reels. It's so much fun. So I love it. Keep up with the reels. They make me laugh. Some of them make me laugh. I'm like, I love this.
Yes. And if people do want to follow you on Instagram, where can we find you?
It's really long because I wanted to put my full name. Maybe just go on your Instagram and just click on the followers list, and it's me.
I'll check in the show notes.
It's Alicia _ Jack Cavusi. Yeah, who's gonna remember that? But yes, you can find me on that. So it's Alicia _ Jack Cavusi. Just look for the bald headed Tongan.
The one that lifts weights like a bloody
legend. Oh, this is too funny. But thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word Kiwis Talk About Cancer is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. And anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/thecword.
We're gonna turn this party out. I know you want my body. I'll be your daddy girl. Calling all the girls. I see you looking up and down. And I make the party sexy. Tonight I am all yours, boy. The way your body moves across the floor. And I got a media singer. I just want to take you home with me. Be your naughty girl.
I know the type. They got drunk, they got guns, and yes, they wanna fight. And they see a young couple having a time that's good. And the Eagles wanna test the brother's manhood. So they came to test me, cause of my heritage. And the loud, bright colors that I wear. I was a target, cause I'm a fashion misfit. And the outfit that I'm